about that yesterday. He's going to throw it up on the board, and we'll give it a gander.
I'll try and be real quick. Before we talk about the timeline, Before we talk about the timeline, I'm just going to offer a few of my thoughts here, that a couple things. Even though we may have another month or a couple months to work on this thing, I think we got to stay focused on what Amendment 16 is trying to do and try and avoid the temptation to start adding a lot of options and measures. We really don't have time to start expanding the scope of this document. Granted, we have to address further some issues like monitoring and reporting, but I would hope that the council would resist the urge to start loading more things onto the Christmas tree here. I'd also point out, as you look at the schedule, I kind of tried to be a little skimpy on meetings, to some extent anyway, and that's because it takes time for the staff to get work done. And while council and committee members often want to have a lot of meetings, most people on the PDT are not working on groundfish full time, and it takes time to get the work done. And the last thing I'll mention is that there are some occasions here where you'll see in the schedule that there are some competing priorities that are not only going to take staff time, but I think will have to be fit in when we try and schedule these events. So basically, what I've laid out here is that between June and July, we have a groundfish committee meeting, or perhaps meetings, I'm not quite sure we could fit into, to address some of these sector monitoring and other reporting issues. I think there may be some interest in addressing reporting for the common pool as well as the sectors, which is why I said that. Revisit the recreational commercial allocation decisions. That's referring to the tabled motions from yesterday. There are probably some other things. August 4th through 8th, the GARM 3 final assessment meeting. Now, we had been told for quite some time that the PDT, once the meeting is over, can start working with the understanding that the report is not going to be final until later. So presumably the PDT will start taking this information in August to review the impact on rebuilding plans. And then this next part, in early September, tentatively a council meeting to receive the GARM 3 report, the PDT report, and begin measure development. I mean, I don't know if we want to call this a council meeting or a meeting of the council as a groundfish committee of the whole or whatever we call it, but whatever. Ideally, what we'd like to be able to do at this meeting is what we could not do with Framework 42, and that is to walk in the room, have the Science Center present the GARM 3 results, have some discussion, and have the PDT stand up and say, okay, this is what you have to do for fishing mortality rates to comply with the rebuilding program. So that ideally what we'd like is to have all that on the table at the same time. So for example, you can get the comment on stock status and then hear the answer to the question, can we rebuild by 2014 or 14? What's the fishing mortality rate? Do we need another rebuilding program for a stock that was not overfished before? Scheduling that meeting might be a little bit difficult because in early September, and I forget the exact date, but I think it's the week of September 8th, if I recall, if I got my date right, is the TMGC meeting, which will suck up a number of council members, and then immediately afterward is the steering committee meeting, which sucks up a few council members, I think. Now, both the advisory panels have asked to meet, and this is something that we might want to be a little flexible on. You know, they want to meet at a time when they can provide meaningful input. They don't just want to review decisions that were made by the committee and council. It's not clear to me that we can fit in an AP and RAP meeting before the early September council meeting, but that might be preferable to doing it after the early September council meeting. Then in mid-September, the idea here is that the council would sort of scope out what they want the committee to do. The committee would go off and refine this based on the council guidance or follow up on anything that the council hadn't done, incorporate the AP and recreational advisory panel stuff. And then the October council meeting, I might have these dates wrong, but it's the first week of October, have the council approve the measures for the DEIS. So the change here is that rather than the final vote, which is what we had talked about before, this would when we would be approving the measures. The idea here is to have a complete approval of the measures at this meeting. And hopefully what we'll be focusing on is the effort controls, that we won't be going back and revisiting a lot of the measures that we approved to put in the document back in February, some of which we revisited yesterday. And then afterwards, the October, will complete, the PDT will work on completing the DEIS and bring it to the council in November for the council to go out and take out to public hearing. It will probably take a few weeks to clean up the document if the council makes any changes at its meeting in November, and then submit that to the Fisheries Service. They have to review it to make sure it's acceptable to take out to public hearing. And I think the reality is that that means that the public hearings are going to be in January. I quite honestly don't want to take this document out the week before Christmas. But besides that, I'm not sure we could get it done before Christmas, and it's probably best just to plan on the public hearings in January. Bring it back with the public comments and make a final decision in February. This is somewhat similar to the timing on Framework 42. It took us till about the middle of April on Framework 42 for the document to be officially submitted to NIMS. We turned it into NIMS in March, but they wanted some changes made to the document, so the official submission date was April. So I'm figuring it's going to take roughly the same amount of time here. We submit the document to the Fisheries Service, and I'm not really sure how long it's going to take to implement. I think optimistically you would hope that the service could get it implemented by August. But they made some comments yesterday. It took to November to implement Framework 42. We have to recognize that there's going to be a change in administration going on. Not quite sure how that will affect the approval process. So I put this window on here for September, December for implementation, because it wasn't real clear to me how long it might take the service to get it implemented. Now, a couple things I think goals we ought to shoot for, at least, is to make our decisions in time that the document gets submitted before the end of the 2008 fishing year. I think that, to me, is critical for a lot of reasons. We don't want this to drag out so far that it doesn't have any prayer of getting implemented at all during fishing year 2009. So that focuses on the final decision in February, trying to get the document officially submitted to NIMS, you know, no later than mid-April, ideally sooner than that. And that's my comments. I don't know if George might want to comment on the timeline between March and implementation. I don't know if what I put up is reasonable or not.
I think if everything goes well, you're right that probably August, September would be realistic. But the issues you raised are also true. We're going to be under a new administration, and it may take some time for them to get up and going and comfortable in passing regulations through. We just don't know. So obviously earlier is better, and we would hope to do that. But can't be sure.
Council members, any comments? Jim Odlin. And my only question is that we've always had a problem implementing a days at sea program any other time but at the beginning of a fishing year. And we know this is going to have some kind of cuts in it. I'm wondering how you prorate that or how we deal with that in mid-year or three-quarters through a year of implementation. I know that's been a problem for us in the past.
Dr. Pierce.
Regarding the days at sea cut, I suspect the default will kick in, so that will happen on May 1, the 18% days at sea cut. And, of course, we should have some idea well before then what else is going to be required for us to do what is necessary to cut mortality to the levels we need to achieve.
Okay, anyone else on the council? So this is the way we'll proceed based on this timeline, understanding that things can change again and we'll have to adapt and adjust again if that happens. Okay, any other business? Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In view of the fact that this will be delayed and that there's the potential for secretarial action to provide some interim management measures, nonetheless, I think it's important for us to try to do as much as possible to encourage the actions be taken that would mitigate some of the impact of whatever the new measures are and the lack of it. And I would request, I move that the council request the secretary to take interim action to, one, reauthorize the Eastern U.S. Canada SAP, two, to continue the 18-inch minimum size for haddock, three, remove the tax on the days at sea transfer, four, expand the closed area one haddock SAP, all of which are described in the Amendment 16 document, and that they be done through some interim measure by the secretary. Thank you.
Is there a second? You want this one, Mike?
Tom Hill.
No. Mike Leary. Mike Leary. Discussion? I think all of these points were discussed yesterday under groundfish. We talked about the mitigating factors that are options or alternatives, if you will, that were are in the document. Both the audience and council members identified all of these. So I think what you're asking is if the secretary finds it necessary to do something above and beyond the default, that the secretary consider utilizing these measures that are in Amendment 16 in the interim action or the secretarial action? Is that the gist?
Well, some of these things expire prior to when Amendment 16 would come in, even under its best circumstances. But these were all actions developed in Amendment 16 to try to improve and mitigate, improve the situation and mitigate some of the expected cuts that would be taken. So what I think would be best is if the council requests the secretary to take interim action to affect these, regardless of whether he decides to take interim action to provide some alternative management measures. But if he should be deciding to take alternative management measures, that these be included in that as well, because they'd be part and parcel of any package. But ideally, some of these should be done as soon as possible because they expire, and the sooner they could be done, the better. But I think that would, obviously that'll be up to the secretary. That this would be anticipated to be a letter from the council to the secretary.
Dave Gaethel.
Actually, I don't think that's altogether true. The first two expire. The last two are Amendment 16 actions that had all various alternatives that we haven't even gone to public hearing with yet. I don't know whether the last two would fall under interim action status or not. I mean, the first two, it could be argued, were an emergency if they expired, but I'm not sure the last two are an emergency. They're actually more in the way of relief for the industry.
Frank Blount.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned if it says request the secretarial action, because I'm not sure if the secretary has to take action or is going to, but I think once you request it, if we request it, wouldn't the secretary have to do everything to implement everything else? I mean, if the secretary determines that you don't have to take action until we have the amendment in place, that the default is okay, that's one thing. But if you request the action, would the secretary or the agency have to make sure that your action takes place prior to then to meet the objectives of the plan?
There's no specific legal requirement to do that. You know, the secretary would, well, first of all, we don't have to do it just because you request it to begin with. So as long as George votes no, and it's unanimous otherwise. So it's, you know, I think if we're going to do something, we would do it anyway.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with the sentiment of this, but I think Frank is exactly right. Let's not give him the idea. So I would say if we want to do this, it would be to request if he intends to take secretarial action, and I think we should hold off on this letter anyway. I think it's a little too early for it. I don't disagree with it. I just think that it shouldn't be right now. I mean, we just got this news, and we're floundering about for direction and just making up new timelines. I think we need to digest this before we start talking about interim actions.
Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. George.
I'm going to have to make the usual statement we make. I'm going to have to vote no on this because to preserve the secretary's prerogative doesn't necessarily reflect our willingness to consider this.
Dave Simpson.
Yeah, I think just following what Dave Preble said, that I'd feel more comfortable if this said something, should the secretary take interim action, we'd request that they include these items in that action. I'm not really in favor of requesting an interim action be taken just to do this stuff on its own.
So is that you're asking, you're going to accept that as a friendly amendment to your motion? Okay. Claire, Doug.
Excuse me.
It says Claire McBain in front of you.
Oh gosh. There we go. I guess I have to agree with Dave Preble that I think this might be a little premature at this point, so I'm going to vote against it. But my sentiment is that in the future I might vote for it.
Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Six opposed. Seven. Motion fails 6-7. George Darcy.
Abstain.
George abstains.
I quit.
If you quit, you have to give the plaque back. Okay, anything else from the council? Harriet, you had an item you wanted to bring up.
Just a couple of quick things. Today on the scoping, Amendment 15 scoping, I don't know if you asked for any comments for the audience. If you did, I apologize because I didn't hear it. But there's a couple of issues. And number one is that I guess now we're going to go into subcommittee hearings, right, from the Scallop Committee on the scoping or Amendment 15. Personally, I feel that we have complied with the ACLs and the AMs, but maybe we need an amendment. If we do, we do. But as far as an amendment of stacking or quotas that's going to reduce capacity in the fishery, that's not what an amendment like that's going to do. You're going to increase capacity. And I just want to say that publicly at the council, so it's publicly on the record. Any stacking is going to increase capacity. You might get rid of some old vessels, but the capacity to fish is going to be more than it is today because it's going to be fished on newer, bigger, better vessels. That's why people want this, to fish more. You're going to ruin the community, but capacity, you're saying you want to reduce capacity. Rationalization has been ITQs, as I know it, and the crab fishery and all. None of that is going to do anything with the resource you're going to catch. You're going to catch more. On open days, they're going to catch more. Anybody fishing knows that. That's just a fact. The other issue I want to bring up is on the Scallop Committee, and I'm not a member, that there is an unbalance of people there. The majority are those, a lot of them part of those 100 permits that Mr. Pike doesn't say who he's representing, which I think he should, we all should say. I own a fishing vessel, I have one permit, and I own a ship chandler in the Port of New Bedford. And there is an unbalance there. So for people to go to those hearings all summer, and especially fishermen who are busy and very busy in the summer, and know that when the vote comes, the people sitting there now with control, they want this. They're the people who own multiple permits, bought up everything floating they could, no matter if it, you know, as long as it floated, to get the permits. It's about the permits to push for something like this. So I feel it's a real problem. I feel you have to reassess your Scallop Committee because you might as well say you stack the ballot box. And as far as people not wanting the IFQs now, I've fought against it forever. But if you're going to make moves, I think the industry should speak. These people don't want it now because, of course, they don't want to have the referendum. There's a burden to it. Stacking what we have now, days at sea and the closed areas, any open days, you're going to increase capacity. And as far as overcapacity, who's to say what's overcapacity? Probably 10, 15 good boats could catch what you're allowing us to catch. Does that mean that's what we should have and put all the other people out of work and out of jobs and flatten the communities? But the main point here is you have an unbalance on your Scallop Advisory Committee, and I don't think that's the democratic way to run things. I mean, I know most of the names there now, and this is just to go through the motions because everybody knows what the vote's going to be when they vote. So it would be the only way you would receive a balance of this would be the moderators at those meetings, what they could do, but you're taking votes. And then it comes back here and it says the majority wants. We already know the majority. So, I mean, you're running a process that's costing time and money that just any of us who have been involved, we know who's sitting at the table and we know what they own and we know what's going to happen. I want to say publicly that I feel it's a real problem. It's a real problem. And you're not going to reduce the capacity that can be caught. This isn't going to reduce the capacity. This is just going to make a few people wealthier, put people out of jobs, 2,000 jobs in the crab fishery. Still going to fish. It's going to have nothing to do with the resource. The next thing I want to mention is that I do feel that The National Marine Fisheries, their survey is in a state of flux. They got a new vessel. They got new drags. All these things are going to be calibrated. And actually, I think the only survey really that has really a record of accurateness is the one from the university. And I want to say, in particular, I do not think that survey methods other than the video survey are cost-effective or statistically efficient at the present time. Therefore, would like to see the video survey identified as the core survey. It has been internationally recognized as a model in cooperative research. A simple criteria to assess the level of innovation of the survey is to consider how many other fisheries in the United States have an absolute estimate of abundance to base their management plan on with a true measure of variance, including incorporating selectivity and efficiency over different sizes of animals and in different habitats. To our knowledge, there is no others. And with the burden of best scientific available science, all these other things that are really in the stage of being developed are not the best science available. So I just want to also put that on the record, that no matter which way the fishery goes, the best science should be what should be used, and I think that that is the survey that has proven itself the best. And I just want to say that for the record. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else from the council? Dr. Pierce?
In light of what Harriet just said relative to the SCALP advisory panel, I would request that the executive committee investigate the validity of her claims to see if indeed the composition of the advisory panel is as she described. And if it is, then perhaps some action should be taken to provide a more representative advisory panel.
Paul?
I don't think we should assign people on advisory panels depending on how they feel about particular issues, whether they want an IFQ or not or something like that. We pick, we've already, you know, picked people for 3 years and did it based on a broad representation and, you know, their resumes and things like that. I don't know if we've ever done that, and I don't know if it's, you know, if the council really wants to do that.
Well, she's made some claims that are almost accusations, and I think it deserves a response. So I would just turn to the executive committee for some guidance, see whether or not you think it should be followed up on. If not, fine, but she made those concerns, and I would hate to have her just leave the room without there being some sort of response.
Well, I'm going to go back and look at the composition, and I'm going to look at who was available to be chosen, who submitted their applications at the time that we made the choices that we made. And I'm not going to promise that anything is going to happen one way or the other, but I will look into it. And I don't want to have a back-and-forth dialogue who's right and who's wrong here.
No, I'm not saying who's right
and
who's
wrong. But I will look at it.
I don't know if you know who the people are, but I do. After 20 years, I know all the players. And quite a few years ago, I put my name in, and Ellen put her name in, back in the late 90s. We'd been there since 1985. And they said, oh, they couldn't have both of us on there because I don't know why. We had separate corporations, each with our husbands, and each owned two boats. But so forth, and then I had personal issues, and I didn't bother anymore, and I haven't bothered. But I see what's there, and I'm just saying for the Democratic way, I know what the vote's going to be. I'm sure anybody observing there would know what the vote's going to be if they know who's who after a while. I mean, it's not rocket science. So you can do what you want, but I'm just saying, I want it for the record to know. We're gonna know what's going to happen, just like you're saying, capacity reduction. There's no capacity reduction here. That's just a smokescreen. You're going to fish. 15, 20 good boats could do it. We've got to look at the economic side, too. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Try to make this as brief as I can. I know it's been a long time for us, and we're all tired. And to the point of Harriet, I have one very disturbing thing here, and I only want to bring it to light to the full council so that it's on the matter of record, and that's under this analysis of stack and permits and doing away with the current replacement criteria to upgrade restrictions. I personally know that there's at least two limited access people that own at least 2 to 5 permits that came off of small boats, lobster boats, from the state of Maine, and their intent is to put these same permits on 117-foot boats with two 15-footers. And I really want you guys to be aware of what they're trying to do here. And there's a perfect example. And if you want to go through with what they've proposed here, all you got to do is pay note to this happening. And after yesterday, I hope this council will not make the same mistakes in the scallop industry as we've made in the ground fishery, because I don't want to be sitting here in 10 years saying, well, we're down to 15 days, what do we do? I think Phil said it all yesterday, and I take that to heart, being part of this council system, that we failed. Thank you.
Back to the council, anything? Anything, hon? Nope. Okay, well, we'll see you all, I guess, in September. Enjoy your summers.
Oh, there's a new song we can sing.